This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is the evening edition, and I'm Kelvin Yee. During the Israeli offensive in 2009, Dr. Mads Gilbert was one of two foreign doctors allowed into Gaza, spending days and nights at the busy and overcrowded Al-Shifa hospital, treating scores of patients injured from the war. Dr. Gilbert and his colleague Dr. Eric Foss then published a book called Eyes in Gaza and later Night in Gaza, based on what he saw during his time at the hospital. He joins us today to talk more about his work and the situation in Gaza. Doctor, welcome to the show. Let's start with you telling the listeners about who you are.
I'm a medical doctor from Norway. I was educated in Norway. I've been an anesthesiologist all my professional career. And in Norway, the anesthesia doctors are in charge of emergency medicine and the operating room and the ICU, so it's a broad-based specialty. And I've always been interested in international medicine. And as a socialist, I've been interested in solidarity work. And I've always considered medicine as an important tool for solidarity with the less fortunate. So aside from having worked in the Arctic University of Norway and the University Hospital in Tromsø for many years, I've also been working with projects in the Global South. I've been working in Burma with the resistance movement there. I've been working in Cambodia with landmine injuries and training local people at rural level. I've been working in Angola and in Afghanistan, but mostly I've been working with the Palestinian healthcare system since the early 80s. And for the last 15 years, I've been working with the healthcare system in Gaza.
How did you end up in Gaza?
How did I end up there? That's a good question. I think life is pretty random and, you know, we never know where it's taking us. But my basic starting point was that I wanted to try to be useful and try to be a tool for improvement of living conditions. And I think all people have that in them, that we want to share, we want to be showing solidarity, we want to be altruistic and help the others who may be in a difficult position, not out of pity, but out of respect. So I'm not concerned with charity work, I'm more concerned with solidarity work, which is basically asking the others, how can I be of help for you? Instead of saying, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to give you money, I think it's more important to listen to people who are in a difficult position and try to through your deeds, to support their struggle for a better life. And for the Palestinians, that has meant just to, you know, go there during difficult times and also in between.
Were you always in support of the Palestinian struggle?
I was originally, as most European youngsters, brought up with the idea of Israel being this fantastic country which made the desert bloom, and it was surrounded by the dirty, dangerous Arabs, and we had to support Israel because of the horrible things that happened during the Second World War, which of course was horrible. The Holocaust was an unforgivable sin by European basically negligence, by overlooking what the Nazis were doing, and I think the Jewish people really should have been protected much more. But I was brought up with this idea that it was Israel that was having the right to have that land. So I actually volunteered to go to Israel in 1967 during the Arab-Israeli War to work in a kibbutz, but I was actually stopped by my sister, who said, No, you got it all wrong. Haven't you heard about the Palestinians? And I hadn't. So for the first time as a medical student, I heard about the Palestinians. I had never heard about them during my education. And once I got to understand what the occupation of Palestine was doing to the Palestinian people, that became my preference, of course. And then I was in Beirut in 1982 as a young doctor during the Israeli invasion and bombing of Beirut, and it made a very deep impression on me, because I had never been able even to imagine what the sufferings and the bloodshed was looking like at the sharp end of what is called modern warfare. And modern warfare is not very modern, it's medieval. And the tactics used by the Israelis is really medieval, because what they did in 82 in Beirut before the Sabra and Shatila massacres, they actually besieged the whole city. They cut the water supply, the power supply, the food supply, the medical supplies, and they bombed the city night and day through the summer of 1982. And that was my first encounter with Israeli colonial and military oppressive systems. And it never left me. So from then on, I was caught in the Palestinian struggle. And I've been trying to do a little part to support their struggle. So I've been working as a doctor, teaching, working with them in difficult times. I've been in the West Bank and in Gaza during both the intifadas. And then I've been working in Shifa Hospital for many years, in and out. And during the last four Israeli military attacks, I was fortunate to work in Shifa. And I was unfortunate to see the horrible suffering of the Palestinian people. And I was fortunate to see the courage, the dignity, and the high moral and medical standards that the medical staff in Shifa and the other hospitals and the ambulance services showed me and showed the world. So I am by no means a hero. The heroes are the Palestinian health workers. And I think that Gaza is a very strong proof and evidence of human dignity and human courage and survival capacity.
You said that the real heroes are the Palestinian health workers. Tell us about the ones you worked with.
Let me tell you about Nafis El Karim, a young anesthesiologist. I met him when he was just finished medical school. He was trained in Ukraine and Russia, like many medical doctors were from Palestine at that time. Because during Soviet Union, the PLO and had very strong ties to the regime in Soviet. He came back. He is a typical Palestinian academic, young, enthusiastic. He's a refugee in Gaza. 75% of the 1.8 million Palestinians in Gaza are formerly refugees, internal refugees. He married. I was part of the marriage. He has now five children. He has educated himself to be an extremely clever anesthesiologist. He's a master with the needles. He's learned himself to do neural blocks. And he's been working in many different parts of the healthcare system. He lives in Beach Camp, which is one of the biggest refugee camps in Gaza. He never leaves his patients. He never leaves his family. He never leaves his people. And I've asked Nafis many times, why don't you just take your family and go to Europe or to the United States? You would have brilliant opportunities. And he said, no, my duty as a person and as a doctor is to be with my people. It is to support the struggle for Palestine. And regardless of the hardship, regardless of the bombing, regardless of the lack of food and security from the siege, he stands with his smile, his gentle manners, his extreme hospitality, for me as a symbol of the Palestinian people and their cause, their suffering, but more than the suffering, their dignity and their moral qualities. So that's one. I could tell you about Ayman, an orthopedic surgeon, actually trained in Malaysia, going back to Gaza, doing extremely qualified, highly professional surgery in Shifa during these extremely difficult times. That was during the last attack. Everybody remembers cast lead in 2009, and everybody thought it was horrible. During this last attack last summer, the Israelis used 552% more ammunition by metric tons than they used in 2009. Five times more. And we thought 2009 was brutal. This last attack was incredibly brutal, to put it in a diplomatic way. And Dr. Ayman, with the others, had to perform 10th and 10th of amputations with the same diligent and professional quality, and with their back towards the wall, because when we did the surgery, the lights would go out, because one of the first things that the Israeli occupying forces are doing when they attack Gaza is to cut the electricity. And they bombed the one and only electrical plant in mid-Gaza. So for 18 hours a day, there is no electrical power at all. And Shifa, like other hospitals, is totally dependent on generators, and they break down because they don't have spare parts as a cause caused by the siege. So then you have to improvise, and the Palestinian doctors and nurses and anybody working in the hospital are like cats. They are masters of landing on their feet, even given situations that would make most of us just sit down and cry. They continue their work. They don't give up. They take up their mobile phones. They do the operation in the light from the screen of the mobile phone. Why don't they have headlights or torches? No, because that's on the list of the siege. The Israelis don't allow that in. Why don't they have enough local anesthetics? Because of the siege. Why don't they have replaced the old trolleys and the equipment in the ICU? Because of the siege. It's a man-made, deliberate suffering made by the government of Israel in order to break the backbone of the Palestinians people, the Palestinian people's resistance, actually, to force them to surrender, to wave the white flag and say, we give up, we leave. But these young doctors, these elder doctors, these veterans, these paramedics, these families, these parents losing their kids, are all saying, this is not about Hamas. This is not about PLO or PA. This is about the Palestinian people resisting an unjust occupation. This is our land, and we will not surrender. We'd rather die here. As said Dr. Subi Skaik, my mentor, my role model, and the medical director of Shifa Hospital, who I have interviewed in my last book, he said that to me during the last attack. He said, Dr. Mats, this time I will die in Shifa. Whatever they do, I will not give up. And we are, as medical doctors and a medical system, we are part of the resistance. The peaceful, non-violent, violent resistance, the popular resistance against the occupation. And I think this is important for the Malay people to understand. This is not a Muslim cause. This is not a religious cause. This is a human cause. This is sort of the test tube where we, as a world, as individuals, as governments, as states, as, you know, the world community, will show whether or not we allow might to define right.
When we come back, I'll be asking Dr. Gilbert to share his stories about his thoughts on the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. You're listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
This is the Evening Edition, and I'm Kelvin Yee. Today, we're speaking to Dr. Matt Gilbert, who served as a doctor in war-torn Palestine. He's here to tell us what his experiences there and what the situation was really like. Now, doctor, many people have their own views about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. What's yours, given you were actually there?
This has always been called a very difficult conflict, Palestine-Israel. It is not a difficult conflict. It's a difficult occupation. It's an illegal occupation. It has lasted for more than 50 years. It's the longest standing illegal occupation in modern history. It's an apartheid system. Political Zionism is an apartheid system. It divides between races. There are different rights for Palestinians and Israelis. It's a deeply colonial system. It's a system where they want to occupy and drive out the Palestinian people. And as such, this has, of course, nothing to do with anti-Semitism. We all support the Jewish people and their right to exist. The foreword in my last book is written by Max Blumenthal, a brilliant American Jew. I have many Jewish friends. But this is a matter of whether or not we accept apartheid and colonialism. If we don't, then we support the Palestinian people and all the Jewish voices, in particular in the United States, who side up with the Palestinians in saying that we don't support the Zionist colonial project. If we leave Palestine to itself, if we don't stand up, history will judge. This is not a Muslim cause. This is a human cause about human rights, about international law, about respecting international law, and about actually forcing the State of Israel and the Israeli government to comply with international law, to lift the siege of Gaza, to stop bombing, and to find a political solution. There are no military solutions to the occupation of Palestine. The occupation has to end, and there must be a just solution for both people, in particular for the Palestinian people. That's your duty, that's my duty, that's the duty of the Malay government, of the Norwegian government, and history will judge. We have had disasters in history because we looked away, because we didn't care, because we let power define right. That should not be repeated.
During your work there, were you treating mostly soldiers or civilians? Because the claim was that they were mainly soldiers.
Yeah, that's a blatant lie. I would, and if you just read the material, if you read the reports that have come out, I sit here with the Human Rights Council, the UN report of the detailed finding of the Independent Commission of Inquiry established pursuant to Human Rights Council resolution, blah, blah. It's dated the 23rd of June this year. It's a very comprehensive UN report, and it gives you the numbers. 2,200 almost Palestinians killed, 70% civilians, 71 Israelis killed, 90% soldiers. 4 civilian Israelis killed, 1,400 civilian Palestinians killed. For every Palestinian fighter that the Israeli army killed, they killed 5.3 civilians. So for every guerrilla soldier on the Palestinian side that the Israeli army killed, they killed 5 civilians. Half of the killed civilians were women and children. On the Israeli side, as I said, 67 of the killed were occupation soldiers.
But there is a right to resist in occupied territories, correct? So in this case, the Palestinians have that right, wouldn't they?
International law has defined the right of an occupied people to resist. They have the right to resist even with weapons as they see them fit. It's the occupied people that is having the right to resist, not the occupier. So when Israel say that they are defending themselves when they are bombing Gaza, in fact, it's an occupier bombing an occupied people. And anybody, even a child, would understand that those who are being occupied and bombed have the right to resist. Now, I condemn any attack on civilian targets, be it from the Palestinian side or from the Israeli side. But the proportion is striking. When the Israelis have killed 1 Palestinian soldier, they killed 5 civilians. When the Palestinians killed 1 Israeli soldier, they killed 0.06 civilians. So there is no doubt, if you look at the numbers, that the Israeli army was going after not their military counterpart, the armed factions in Gaza, but they were killing civilians. And we saw it in Shifa. We saw it in the numbers. The UN report states that 551 Palestinian children were killed. So the Israeli governmental army killed on an average 10 children per day. On the Israeli side, one child was killed. And of course, that is one Israeli child too much. No Israeli child should be killed, nor should 551 Palestinian children be killed. And to answer your question, you know about the who were the targets, the Israeli government never, ever apologized or in a way regretted publicly that they killed more than 500 Palestinian children. And turn it around and ask yourself, what would the world have said if Palestinian fighters had gone into Israel and, God forbid, killed 551 Israeli children? We all know the answer. Gaza would have been wiped out. There would have been an uproar internationally. It would have been called terrorism and blah, 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 blah. And of course, if Palestinian fighters had done that, had perpetrated the killing of 500,000 Israeli children. It should have been named terrorism. Why is it not that the Israeli attacks on Gaza, on occupied Palestine, is not named by its true name, state terrorism? Why is it that Israel enjoys this international impunity from international law, from the Geneva Convention, from the Hague Convention, from sanctions? And it was quite strange to be in Shifa July last year and to sort of be in this mist of blood, this bloodshed, all these children, women, civilians coming in from the systematic bombardment from the Israeli governmental forces, supported by the US. And at the same time, watch the news and see that the international community, EU, US, UN, quickly imposed sanctions that summer. On Israel? No. On Russia? Yes. Why? Well, because of the incidents in Ukraine. I don't support the Russian politics in Ukraine, but it was a striking difference between the willingness to impose sanctions against Russia as opposed to the lack of willingness to impose sanctions on the state of Israel, as they were killing civilians by the thousands, much more than what was going on in Ukraine. And this double standard is a huge moral challenge to us, because if we don't stand up and defend the Palestinian people, we actually are complicit. As Desmond Tutu, the famous South African bishop, said, if you try to be neutral in a situation of oppression or injustice, you end on the side of the oppressor. And Nelson Mandela himself said, our freedom is incomplete without the freedom of the Palestinian people. So I think the Palestinian people and their cause, their struggle against colonialism, against apartheid, and against occupation, is a struggle for all of us, because it is a struggle about might being defined as right. It is a struggle against those who are totally ignoring international law and who are exempting themselves from obeying international law, and who are mercilessly starving a whole people, killing a people, killing children, killing women at large, again and again. The last attack was not the first, it was the fourth since 2006. And we are all responsible. If you shut up, if you don't voice your concern, if you don't take part as a Malaysian in the boycott movement, in some sort of activity, then you are complicit in the oppression of the Palestinian people. If you're Christian, or if you're a Muslim, or if you're a socialist, whatever, you have a responsibility. That's why I am in Malaysia now. It is actually to support the good people in Malaysia who are working to support the Palestinian people. We need it more than ever. We need more solidarity in this world, not less. We need more activism, not less. We need more turn off the television set and make yourself an activist.
We're going to break for the news now, and when we come back, I'll be talking to Dr. Gilbert about his work at the Al-Shifa Hospital and what he's seen during his time there. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Break from mediocrity, BFM 89.9.
This is the Evening Edition, and I'm Kelvin Yee. Today we're speaking to Dr. Mats Gilbert, who served as a doctor in war-torn Palestine. He's here to tell us about his experience there and what the situation was really like. So, Doctor, you spoke earlier about the health workers in Palestine and shared with us stories of those you worked with, the real heroes, as you put it. Just to put things into perspective, could you also describe a day on the ground in Gaza?
Well, if you really want to know, you should read my last book, which is called Night in Gaza, and it can be ordered through the Viva Palestine, Malaysia. All the income from the book goes to the foundation that I've made, which is called the Tromsø Foundation Justice in Palestine. And we award scholarship to Palestinian and Norwegian young medical persons, so to have exchange programs. So that said, I'm not earning anything from it. A day on the ground in Gaza was a sharp contradiction between suffering, death, misery, horrible injuries on the one side, and on the other side, bravery, dignity, solidarity, high professionalism, and an enormous cohering attitude in the people, from man to woman, from left to right, from doctors to ambulance paramedics, from civilians to politicians, a united people saying that we are all part of the resistance. So in Shifa, it would be, depending on the bombing, we would have currents of injured coming in, and they would come just minutes after the bombardment, because Gaza is so small. It's only 3-4 kilometers wide on the top of the little enclave where Shifa Hospital is located in Gaza City, which has 600,000 inhabitants. Altogether in Gaza, it's 1.8 million. The average age in Gaza is 17.6 years, and 60% of the inhabitants are 18 and below. So it's a child ghetto. It's a youth ghetto. So a large number of the injured would be very young. They would come in unsorted to the emergency department, delivered from ambulances, from taxis, from private cars, in a very chaotic stream of injured, dying, walking, uninjured, parents following, children looking for their parents.
So roughly how many patients did the Al Shifa Hospital see?
Throughout the 51 days ordeal, Shifa Hospital had almost 10,000 patients and people coming to the hospital, about 4,000 being injured, more or less, and close to 2,000 who needed immediate life-saving medical treatment. It's an enormous caseload. So the days would be, depending on the bombing, from quiet waiting to chaotic work, trying to sort out who are the ones that can be saved, who are the ones that are dying and should be left to die, who are the ones who are so slightly injured that they should just be sent out again. And this is the art of medicine, and I think there are few other medical teams in the world more skilled and unfortunately hard trained than the Palestinian medical teams in Gaza. So there would be a senior surgeon at the entrance who would sort in three groups. The lucky ones, the walking, talking. If you talk, you have an open airway. If you can walk, you have enough blood pressure to the brain that you can walk, meaning you have minor injuries. They would be looked at, maybe stitched up, maybe having a wound wash and sent out again. Then you have the unlucky ones who are dying or already dead. About 500 came dying or dead to the hospital. That's 10 per day at least. They are left to die, or they are just tended to in a respectful way and taken around the corner of the surgical block down to the morgue. And then you have the third group, the needing ones, those who cannot walk and talk and who are still alive and may have injuries that can be salvageable through immediate life-saving surgery. It could mean to put in a chest tube. It could mean to do an opening of the chest, an opening of the abdomen, for all stopping the bleeding, the external bleeding, securing the airways, maybe give emergency anesthesia, maybe take them to the operating room. There are 6 operating rooms in Shifa Hospital. We could have much more than 6 patients needing surgery. Then the Palestinians would place 2 operating tables in each room. We could then do 12, and we would do surgery in the hallways, in the corridors, on the floor, all over. And it was, there were sceneries that were simply too brutal to describe. During the night of the Sheshaya massacre, the 23rd July, we had 400 patients coming to Shifa. And again, I am not a hero. The heroes are the Palestinian health workers who never give up, who never surrender. All of them having an earpiece down to their mobile phones, listening to the local Palestinian FM radios, reporting around the clock where the bombs were falling, where the Israeli tanks were moving, which neighborhoods were attacked. Because all of the medical staff also, of course, were victims of the same bombardment. They were not immune. They were not protected. The Israelis attacked and destroyed almost 50 ambulances. They killed almost 20 medical staff, They killed 17 journalists. They destroyed more or less half of the hospitals in Gaza and 60% of the primary healthcare clinics. So not only was there an incredibly high inflow of patients and injured, but there was also an attack on the medical system itself, both through the siege, depleting the resources and the supplies in the hospitals, but also through the direct bombing of ambulances, hospital, and medical staff. This, of course, amounts to war crimes. And it was quite striking for me today to hear about the U.S. bombing of the hospital in Afghanistan with the Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders Hospital, where I guess 17 patients and staff were killed. And the international uproar, rightly so. And the American army already apologizing for this bombing. And they have already started an investigation. It's been condemned all over the world. But last July, August, when the Israeli army bombed Palestinian hospitals and killed ambulance paramedics and doctors, there was not the same outcry. There was not any condemnation. It was always this refrain of Israel has the right to defend itself. Where was the world leaders? Where were they? Obama was supporting it. EU was more or less supporting it. My government was paying only lip service to the Palestinians. So there is one law for Israel and another law for all the others. And this impunity, again, we could see that in our daily work because we thought that the medical system of Gaza should be and would be protected by international agencies. Not so at all. It was a prey to the Israeli war machine. So the days, not one day was like the other day, and this was also during Ramadan, so we were fasting. And to work for 12 hours without water and food, it's quite an undertaking for the Palestinian health staff, who were already quite drained from the long-lasting siege, 8 years of hardship, and the fourth attack in only 8 years. So it's amazing to see the achievements of this medical system, how diligently, how professionally, and with this extremely high morale that they are working. I think we can say that the Palestinian people are currently carrying our dignity on their shoulders because they show us what it means to be human in situations of extreme oppression, of extreme suffering. They stand tall. They don't leave their patients. They don't leave their call. They are working tirelessly to save their fellow man and woman and child. And they are, in effect, showing us what it means to be a human. So if you want to know what it means to be a human these days, you should go to Gaza, or you should go to the West Bank and see how the Palestinian people is carrying their plights and still standing with high moral and an unyielding resistance against the unjust occupation.
I'm speaking with Dr. Mats Gilbert, a doctor who worked in the Gaza Strip, treating a large number of patients, all casualties of war. We'll be right back after this. You're listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bigotry Free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
Good evening, I'm Kelvin Yee, and you're listening to the Evening Edition. In the last 45 minutes, I've been speaking to Dr. Mats Gilbert, who worked in Palestine's Gaza Strip, Al-Shifa Hospital, where he and his colleague Dr. Eric Foss worked tirelessly to help those injured from the Palestine-Israel war. So you're a doctor with a strong political stance. Do you think doctors should stay neutral or apolitical? Is that difficult to do?
We should, of course, remain neutral in relation to each individual patient. Now, if you're my patient and you're a Muslim or a Christian, if you're right-wing or left-wing, if you're black or you're white, if you're rich or you're poor or a man or a woman, I don't care. I will treat you anyhow with the same principles, with the same caring love, with the same professionalism. There is absolute neutrality. But to be a doctor or a nurse also means to look at the greater preconditions for health. And preconditions for health is not hospitals and medical system. It is the equal access to water, to food, to human security, to work, to have a living place, a home, and to have education. And then it's a question of healthcare. And all the above, the access to water, food, security, work, education, is a matter of how the society is organized, the distribution of wealth, whether or not you have a class society or a more equal society. And being a doctor means to look after the preventive part of health and all the preventive medicine aspects, from the haze in KL to the road security in Norway to the bloodshed in Gaza. All these aspects of health have political implications. So in fact, you cannot be a medical person without being interested in society and in political matters. The famous German pathologist Virchow said that politics is nothing but medicine at large. And I support that.
So you're saying politics is money?
It's not a contradiction. Medicine is politics and politics is medicine. They are Siamese twins. And I'm not talking about party politics. I'm talking about how the society is organized, how human life is protected in society or not protected in society. If I should go to Gaza again and again and just soak the blood off the floor and stitch the wounds and give emergency anesthesia without asking myself the question, why all this suffering? Why all these injuries? Why all this bloodshed? Why all this death? I would be a very bad doctor. Because prevention is always better than cure. So my job is to try to prevent this bloodshed from happening again. And that means to try to stop the Israeli occupation of Palestine. That means to try to contribute to the political pressure on Israel to lift the siege of Gaza. That implies that I am a doctor that must also document and argument against the bombing of Gaza and the occupation of Palestine. And that's what I'm doing when I'm traveling to Malaysia. It's part of my medical work. When I'm writing a book or a scientific paper about the patient flow in Shifa, it's part of my medical work. I would be a hopeless doctor if I was only looking after one and one patient and not looking for the larger precondition, the context, why is this happening, and how can we prevent it from happening again?
Do you think world leaders are doing enough?
Not at all. Not at all. My government is not doing enough. My government is, Norway is heading the donor group. The donor group is raising money to restore Gaza now. Only about 1/5 of the pledged money from last November, October, from the donor conference in Cairo, has reached Gaza. Only 1% of the building material needed to rebuild the almost 80,000 housing units that have been bombed by Israel has reached Gaza. Why? Well, because the world leaders are not doing enough. They are obeying Israel's siege of Gaza instead of stopping it. They are pledging but not fulfilling. And they are cowards when it comes to standing up against Israeli colonialism and the occupation of Palestine. My government is cowardish.
Do you think Malaysia is doing enough?
I am not getting into internal Malaysian affairs because that's up to the people of Malaysia to decide. But I have noticed that Malaysia is a member of the Security Council. I have noticed that Malaysia is heading the ASEAN countries. I listened to the Prime Minister's speech in the UN. I was happy to hear his clear stance on Palestine. But I wish that the Malay government could flex its muscles a little bit more and use their important seat in the Security Council to propose, for example, sanctions against Israel until the siege of Gaza is lifted, to propose the same kind of sanctions that the Security Council imposed on Iraq, that US has imposed on Iran, that Norway was imposing on Libya when Libya was bombed. I think that my government and your government has the responsibility to stop the Israeli impunity and their immunity against international sanctions. So yes, I think your government and my government should do much more. And I think the international community is collectively complicit in the suffering of the Palestinian people through its inactivities and through its passive acceptance of the Israeli politics and the oppression of the Palestinian people. How can we change that? You and me can be more active. You can join in Malaysia, you can join Viva Palestina, you can join the BDS movement, you can be an activist if you're Christian or Muslim or you're a teacher or you're a student or you're a worker. Make your union stand up. Don't buy Israeli goods. Force your government to stop importing Israeli goods. Throw Caterpillar and the other war profiteers and occupation profiteers out. So there is so much we can do. And at the end of the day, it is our actions and not the politicians' actions that will change the world. That's the good thing. That's the hopeful thing. And that's what gives me energy to continue.
Is a two-state solution possible?
I will not interfere in other people's internal politics. So I will leave the question of one or two-state solution to the people of Palestine to decide.
Will you ever return to Gaza?
I don't hope I will return. Inshallah, I will return. And of course, we just have to learn from the Palestinian people and their sumud. Sumud is an Arab word. It means steadfastness. And few other places in the world do you see the sumud more pronounced and more sustainable than in occupied Palestine, not only in Gaza, in the West Bank, in the diaspora, in Yarmouk, the very hard-tested Palestinian refugee camp in Syria, in Jordan, in Lebanon, and in among the Palestinian refugees in Egypt. So I will be patient. I will return to Gaza, of course, and I just have to wait for better times, and in the meantime, do even harder work to improve and to enforce and to broaden the solidarity for the Palestinian people.
Our many thanks to Dr. Mads Gilbert for sharing such insightful details into the time he spent working in the Al-Shifa Hospital in the Gaza Strip. Both his colleague, Dr. Eric Foss, and him have published a book called Eyes in Gaza and later Night in Gaza, based on their time there. Make sure you get your hands on them. If you've missed any part of this program, head over to bfm.my to download this podcast. I'm Kelvin Yee, and you've been listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.